Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, guys? I almost just didn't pick up the mic. I can't hear myself on the mic, though. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, now I can hear myself. Look nice. At that. Technical difficulties solved.
Well, it's because your ear, it was, there you go.
Oh, now I'm stereo.
Sometimes our audio only comes out of one of our headphones.
We're living in stereo.
Yep.
What's up, guys? How's your day going? Because we released our episode so late last week, and this one's going to come out early this week, you're going to get two episodes in the span of like 4 days.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
It's going to be real quick. Speaking of last week, I do want to make one addition, and we're going to do this regularly, so this is me just jumping kind of in the episode before we get into pre-release goodness.
Cool.
I want to add one cooling down level card to our ban watch list. We want to kind of keep this updated consistently, and so we want to make sure every episode, if there is a change or something we noticed we missed, we want to add to it. And I want to add Prized Amalgam to cooling down.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, people brought it up, and I kind of do want to agree that, like, if Dredge has enough wins, it's going to be a deck that Wizards doesn't want to be too good, and Prized Amalgam is kind of the card. I mean, I think there's other cards out of that deck, and maybe it's just the Dredge deck, but
you
I think Prized Amalgam is...
It's Prized Amalgam, not Amalgam.
Sure.
you just created an R. I'm not sure how you came up with it. There's not even an R in the name.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Prize. There's an R in Prize.
Yeah, that's true. There you
go. Yeah, there is an R in the name. Don't come at me with that.
Yes. All right. Fair enough. Prized Amalgam. I like
it. So that'll be added. As I said before, we have our Modern Ban watch list. Make sure to check it out on collected.company. It's on every episode page. It'll be listed there. So you can kind of have a look and make sure you know what's possibly in the horizon to be banned and you don't get blindsided as much.
Yeah. Now let's rifle off a couple of the quick plugs we're going to make here before we get into what today's episode is, which is a full Hour of Devastation set review. We're going to go over what we feel are the strongest cards in the set.
What are the chances you think this episode will be in exactly 1 hour long?
We can probably work on that.
Yeah, we're going to try, guys.
Yeah.
It's going to be an Hour of Devastation review.
I just wanted to add one more card to the cooling down, and that's Spellskite. I feel that it's very oppressive.
No, nope, get out of here. All right.
I'm so sad the Spellskite's not like prominent and modern in the way that it once was. It makes
you lived strong for a good like year.
Yeah,
and by the year, like 3 years, 4 years, as Spellskite being the most played creature in the format.
I still have one main deck in Coco, and I played it yesterday against Grixis Shadow, and I like top deck it at the most opportune moment.
Nice.
And it made me so happy.
I mean, the problem is that the two decks it's best against both are no longer good, them being Infect and Splinter Twin.
Yep.
And it's like third most preyed upon deck. Affinity is very good right now. It did really well at the SCG Open this last weekend. It won, I think. But even then, it was like only adjacently good because it sometimes would steal counters off of Arcbound Ravager, and that's all it would do. So you're definitely living in a world that's just not really...
Yeah.
A lot of removal out there, and like decks that want to be removal resistant can still play it, but I don't know how great it is. It's great against Boggles.
When it's just removal resistant,
Noggles.
It's not doing Boggles. Anything for you anymore. That's the problem with that card. It was always great that as a removal resistant thing, it could help you as long as it was like thwarting a lot of the strongest decks in the format. When it's just there to be like effectively a Selfless Spirit, it's just not good enough.
Sure.
And you're just
And Selfless Spirit is better.
Yeah, I mean this doesn't
especially right now because Path is not as popular as Fatal Push, and Fatal Push is good.
Now there is still there's still like the Doran deck that like I've seen people mess around with, and it was sort of what my deck ended up looking a little bit like because Doran's a very good card, and Spellskite plays really well in the Doran deck. But that's the only place that I can think of where it would be particularly good.
Sure,
the Doran Xur deck. That deck's sweet. All right. Anyway.
All right. Moving on. Other things. Make sure to check out. Our sister podcast also on collected.company, The Command Zone. They do awesome Commander content. Game Nights comes out loosely monthly, but you know they just do really cool stuff that way. Make sure to check out us on Twitter. Did we do that already? No.
No.
I'm at Kess Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
We're at the MMCast. Also, look up our Facebook group. It's doing really well. I think we're up to 250-plus followers. 350 followers. Great interaction. People post decks there. We get critiques. The community is really helpful. A bunch of great guys there, so definitely check that out.
It's a really cool... Like, one thing I noticed, so for instance, like last night I noticed somebody said, hey, does anybody have the black-white list Ben mentioned on the episode this week? and like I was able to pull it out of my phone, post it there, and then he responds to it. And like that's a thing that in the past on Twitter we've been able to do, but it gets lost in the Twitter sphere.
Yeah, it's never like a permanent place that's kind of a little bit more easily to find.
And for some reason, the page, the Masters of 100 page, didn't inspire the same kind of interaction. So what's cool about this is like it's pretty instantaneous. We both see the notifications. We're both pretty motivated to interact
well,
there.
Groups are built on Facebook to encourage group activity, and you get alerts, and people can subscribe to them. Well, pages are meant more to be a forward-facing for a company that's like trying to sell or advertise to people, and that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to really create a community with this podcast, and so the group ended up being a better environment for that.
And the Facebook group also doubles as a great place, by the way, for me to post links to 10 Minutes of Magic, my Anchor show.
Yep.
Anchor, if for those of you that are hearing for the first time, is like podcast meets Twitter. It's short form audio blurbs. I do 10 minutes every single day about just all things in Magic, and it's like all different. So I posted a whole bunch of thoughts about Superior Burn and Coco matchup against Death's Shadow, Grixis Shadow. I played like a handful of games yesterday. I do like a trivia league on Tuesday. So I post the links there on the Facebook page. So if you go check that out, you can kind of sample and get a feel for what that show's like.
Sure. I think that's the major call-outs if we're forgetting.
And oh, Patreon.
Oh, Patreon. Yeah, please check out our Patreon. It's how we do all this stuff. It's how we keep this equipment going. It's how we get to sometimes go to GPs. It's how kind of the podcast survives. And we really appreciate all the help you guys do. We're at 100 and almost 40 episodes with this episode. So, you know, it takes a lot of work to make sure we kind of prioritize this. And the Patreon helps us kind of accomplish that. And just, I would actually say, you know, donate to other people's Patreons. You know, the Professor, Wedge, the Command Zone. All these guys do a lot of hard work to kind of get it out there, and there any help that they receive, the more cool content they get. So definitely check out different Patreons out there of the Magic community. They really can it makes all this stuff happen.
Absolutely.
Yep. All right, so this episode, Hour of Devastation, that was 7 minutes. We have 53 minutes if we want this to be exactly 1 hour.
Hour of Devastation.
And so for people who haven't listened recently to our set reviews, originally we were doing set battles and we do top 10 countdowns. We'll still do those. But with sets, we kind of realized that there's like a lot of cards that we want to kind of touch on. And we decided to move away from full on top 10, you know, battles.
Yeah.
So we just kind of go through each one. We're doing this week's alphabetically. We'll figure out eventually exactly how we want to do this. Alphabetically seems nice.
Yeah.
I think we were doing it by rarity before, and that always felt like, oh, these first cards are really cool. And then it's just like, oh, this is just like a weird uncommon that I won't see play. So hopefully alphabetically kind of mixes up the level of power that we talk about. So I guess the last thing is, did you enjoy your pre-release?
I thought my pre-release was awesome. I really had a good time. I was 3-0 going into the fourth round. I split and won some credits, and it wasn't like a legitimate actual like potential 4-0 because I got a bye in the first round, and my split ended with just, I mean, we split the prizes, but like I flooded out so hard in both games that I just got crushed.
Okay.
But even so, it was fun. You know, I like showed up a little late and didn't give myself enough time to build, and I didn't play that much Amonkhet Limited, so I was kind of experiencing both sets in a lot of ways for the first time since the Amonkhet pre-release.
Sure.
I've opened some packs, but I haven't played much Limited, and so, you know, definitely when I had 25 instead of 50 minutes to build, it was taking in a lot.
Yeah.
But I opened up two of the red-blue 1/2/2 flyer with Prowess that when it enters the battlefield, you can put an instant or sorcery from your graveyard on top of your library.
Okay.
And it's just such my kind of card.
Sure.
That I was like, if I'm able to play these, I'm going to. And I'm just going to warp everything to play around these cards. And I ended up building a teamer, like, tempo type of deck. And it was good. It
nice.
Was really good. Overcome, I think, is what the card is called. The new, like, it's the new Overrun, right?
Yeah.
I had one game where I, like, curved into it on turn 5 and did Xaxxes 14 damage.
Overrun is too possibly good, and I think this card is just the same.
Yeah, I mean, Overrun is limited. +3/+3, but it's triple green, so
yeah.
It's like very difficult to cast. The fact that this is double green means that I could play it reliably in a 3-color deck and actually hit it on turn 5.
Yep. Seems good.
Yeah, it was impressive. It was fun. I didn't actually have like very good rares. I opened like two of my rares were split cards, and they were both mediocre. Like
sure.
Failure to Comply, and I got the red-white one.
That's the green-black one I had in my pool, and I was not impressed with it.
Yeah, I had Hazoret. I opened up Hazoret. He was my good card, but like honestly, he's not as like
The mono red one or red black one?
The mono red.
Okay.
In my mind, I was like, okay, this card's great because like you'll just have him, and then when you run out of cards, he'll be great. But every time I had him, he was always in my hand with like one or two cards left, and I never got there.
Oh,
and
sorry, Hazoret, the god.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just turned out to not be good.
Oh, really? I think it's deck dependent because I've had it and it be insane, and I've had it and it be kind of mediocre.
In kind of a tempo deck with like card selection, it makes sense that it's not that good because you always want to have interaction, and I literally never actually got to cast the card and do anything with it. So
okay. I like showed up late to a two-headed giant event where my partner like hadn't played Magic in a while. He's visiting from out of town and was just like down to play, but also like jet lag. So he was really tired, and I basically had to build both decks by myself in half the time you normally have because we were late, and we went 0-2.
Sick.
We had the red blue god, and he's real good. He's the only reason we ever like were close to winning.
He's
ever.
One of the like Scarab or Pharaoh or Scorpion.
He is the
Pharaoh maybe.
No, the Locust God.
Locust God. That's it. Yeah.
The Pharaoh God. There's only one Pharaoh.
Yeah, Scorpion, Locust,
and
Scarab.
Scarab.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, he's the blue red one. The one that when you draw a card, make a token. We kept missing our because my opponent was tired or my teammate was very tired. He kept missing his draw step, make a token.
Yep.
He like for some reason we thought it only triggered on or he thought it only triggered on like effects that draw you cards,
right?
Not just like the card you draw, and so that didn't help. And then
yeah,
we just lost.
Something I want to point out about pre-releases, by the way, it's just a memory that I had from this particular pre-release.
Is it you should pretty much always just play two colors, even if you have rares and other colors that you want to splash?
Yes. Except hey, I played three colors and I got there.
Did
in
you?
My, I did. I feel like I was 3-0 going into the finals.
Yeah. Bye.
Don't take out your frustrations on me. I was in the finals. In my second match, I ended up playing against somebody who he did the classic thing where he entered combat. He made a decision based on forgetting that my creature had reach. And he was like, oh, I forgot that I had reach. And I was like, you can take it back. I don't care. It's a pre-release. I really don't care. Go ahead. And he ended up winning the game, but I ended up winning the match. And okay. Okay, so when you give him the take back and you lose the match, it's a taste of the feel bads, right? It's the same for everybody because nobody wants to be the jerk, but it's a pre-release. So, like, it doesn't really matter. You're just there to have fun.
Yeah, like, no, I think at pre-releases, I'm totally fine with people taking stuff back, partly because no one knows any of the cards. And if this kid, like, or this guy,
yeah.
depending on, or girl, depending on who yeah. you played, walked into the tournament and hadn't read a card specifically because people do that for fun.
Yeah.
Like just like I want to be surprised. And I kind of did that. I didn't read the full, like all of the commons and uncommons that were spoiled on the last day before walking into the pre-release because I've been busy and moving all week. But walking into it, I was just like, that and like that happens and you just don't know like oh that has like
right.
six keywords and I thought vigilance with death touch or trample or something because it's a green card. Why does that green card have vigilance and reach instead of trample and reach like every other green card
that
ever
was the
printed?
Same card I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
The I know exactly the four, what you're four talking for
about.
Five.
Yeah, yeah.
He forgot that it had reach.
Yeah, because it has weird abilities for a green card.
That's so funny.
And yeah,
that
so,
card's sweet though.
Yeah, it's really
it's
good.
A good limiter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the point was, guys, it's just a good reminder is that like Magic has been so successful because it's founded on community. Period. That's where you end the statement right there. The reason this game has been around for 25 years, the reason it's survived the way it has.
It's a social structure.
And the reason that it has never skyrocketed to the point that it goes beyond something like a popular esport or a Hearthstone. It doesn't have the same like level of tier one spikiness that keeps it relevant. That's what made Hearthstone relevant. What's made this game relevant is the community in the secondary market. It's the fact that you can show up to a store with strangers and it's people. That's why Commander is so popular.
Sure.
It's like, I want to play a game of Magic with three other people to have fun. And the point is the gameplay, not the win. And like, yes, there's a spike structure to it, but that's like 10% or less of the community.
And that's not at a pre-release. Like, yes, sometimes people want to get packs, but those people I generally see just, you know, kind of buy the packs and drop. They don't even play because the packs are more valuable for testing for whatever reason,
exactly.
You know, for Pro Tours or whatever. So it's I think the dichotomy is just different. All right, let's get into the set review.
Yes.
All right, first card is a Braid. That is one red, one colorless. Instant, choose one. A Braid deals 3 damage to the target creature or destroy target artifact.
Yeah.
I think this card, for decks that aren't playing green, has good reasons to maybe see play. Versatility is always strong. You should always look at it. I don't know how much better this is than like 2 mana for a bad Lightning Bolt, or which is not even seeing that much play right now.
Or Shatter,
which is also like.
I think you're a little mistaken. So okay, first of all, I agree with you. If you're playing green, you just play a Destructive Revelry. That's what this is. it, like you.
Well, this does something different than Destructive Revelry, because Destructive Revelry can only kill artifacts.
Agreed, but like I can't imagine you're playing a deck that Revelry goes into that doesn't have Lightning Bolt in it.
Sure.
So you are already playing in your main deck the card that does the first half of this card better.
Totally.
So you just play Revelry if you want this
card.
If you're a mono red deck, though, I do think that modality is important, and we talk about this a lot on here.
Well, and Grixis decks, where Grixis probably could use help in their affinity matchup, and this is a good card for that to be in their sideboard that also has use in against, like, oh, I need more creature removal for whatever reason. This can be brought in against, like, a goblin, you know, weird adjacent decks like a merfolk, goblins that need to be able to kill something.
Also noted, whenever they
really
print
against merfolk,
whenever they print a card that has an interactive ability that's strong that doesn't play all colored mana symbols that has a generic cost, it means that this fits into a cost reducer deck well. So this is actually probably like a solid sideboard option in Storm.
Storm, sure.
Because it does
get
two things.
Gets rid of A cards, gets rid of creatures that might be in the way. Yeah.
There's two things Storm wants to be doing out of the board sometimes, and it's going to be played for one mana almost
100%
of
the
time.
Yeah, and a lot of the creatures that they have problems with are, or a lot, like a lot of things they have problems are either creatures or artifacts. Like this doesn't get rid of like ley lines, which is a problem for them.
Yeah.
But other than that, I would agree. This is pretty strong. And there are, like, against Merfolk, being able to get rid of an Aether Vial or any of their creatures for, you know, as a Lightning Bolt, like, this has good versatility there. So yeah, it's definitely a versatile card. And we'll see how strong it is. I definitely think it's worth definitely considering a Modern for now on.
For sure.
Next is Beneath the Sands. This is green 2 sorcery. Search your library for a basic land card, put it on the battlefield, tap and shuffle your library, cycle 2.
Well, it has cycling.
So it has cycling. Well, I mean, what's interesting about this is this does a lot of what, you know, classically cards that ramp are bad in the late game. That's the biggest problem with ramp cards. That's the cost. You sometimes draw the big thing you want to cast with all that land you have, but sometimes you draw the thing you can't. This lets you dig for the big thing. This late game is great while it's also decent on turn 3. Yes, a turn 3 ramp spell is much worse than turn 2, though.
Modern decks are too tight. This is not a relevant card. It's just, it's you, your opportunity cost. Yes, the cycling helps, but the fact that this, you never ever want this. You never ever want this as your ramp spell. There's
sure.
too many good ones.
Yeah.
So it's pointless to play this.
There's
card.
One mana ramp spells, there's two mana ramp spells, and the two ones do more. Next is Bantu's Last Reckoning. Black, colorless.
Sick.
Sorcery. Destroy all creatures, lands you control, don't untap during your next untap step.
Let's just quickly do the cycle of these, because I think it's important that we talk about them, because they all have the drawback on these cards all needs to be related, so there's no point in just skipping around. So there's 5 of them, and I actually did this on Anchor last week, and I have I think I have a pretty strong sense of the 5, but all right, Bantu's Last Reckoning, we'll start with this one. So this is almost strictly better than Damnation is what people are saying. Almost.
It's not strictly better than Damnation. Lands not untapping is so much worse than kill all creatures that have regenerate.
Right. I've heard a lot of people say this.
Yeah,
this is a thing. I mean, granted, maybe that's hyperbole, but like black 1, sorcery, destroy all creatures. They can't be regenerated, or just destroy all creatures.
No, just destroy all creatures.
And yeah, lands you control don't untap. So this is...
In fact, I would go outright and say this is worse than
Damnation.
Unless your deck is specifically taking advantage or has loop arounds around this problem, which means it's not strictly better.
So let's start with the card that this cycle is in reference to, Savor the Moment. That's the first thing people think of when they see this cycle, right? Savor the Moment is blue, 1, take an extra turn after this one, skip your untap step.
Sure.
That's the classic effect that they're modeling these after. But instead of you don't get an untap step, you get to untap everything except your lands, which means in a creature deck, the 5 of these effects, they all have a uniquely different axis they're attacking on.
Sure. I mean, this is worse in a creature deck because your creatures are dead. But I would say there's 3 things that are important with this card, with the destroy all creatures. One, it's snapcasterable on turn 5.
Yep.
So you get 2 hits of this if you need it in a deck playing Snapcaster Mage. 2, with artifacts, this card is very good because those artifacts can then be used for mana or do whatever you're doing with those artifacts.
Like, this is very good in like a Tezzerator type of thing that's going to play Talismans.
Correct. Which Tezzerator has been doing better recently, so this theoretically could be a shoe-in for that deck, at least in the sideboard. And 3, as a one of, yes, I think can see the seeing play. Do I think this is better than Damnation? No. I think this is a card that, yes, it costs 1 less, but sometimes casting this on turn three is going to be worse than turn four just because you let them overextend a little bit more by turn four.
Yeah, but keep in mind, the one I think makes this one so strong is the decks that are going to want to be playing a Wrath very often, the turn after you play the Wrath, they're not going to do anything. So they're going to...
Right, but they don't do anything because they want to hold counter magic up or something else. And I think the last thing on this, sorry, I did miss this, is that you can cast this on turn five with two mana still open.
Right.
So you can cast this and keep Remand up.
Exactly.
And on your next turn, you theoretically could not cast Remand on that turn and have two mana, and then you have three more mana because you can play a land that turn. So the later the game gets, the better this card is.
Agreed.
But you still have... Not untapping your lands is a huge cost. I played with two of these during the pre-release. I had the green one and the blue one, and we'll get to those. And both of them, the later the game get, the worse they felt, and then the earlier the game was, the worse they felt. So it was like a weird dichotomy of like, when is this super strong and figuring out. And some of that has to do with the deck. Like, and we'll get to
it. I haven't gotten to play with any of them yet. Let's talk green, because the green one's my favorite.
For the green one, is green.
It's Rhonas's Last Stand.
Rhonas's Last Stand, a sorcery. Create a 5/4 green snake creature token. And don't untap your lands. So what's interesting about this one is kind of what we mentioned with Bantu, is late game you can just cast this and not do anything else on that turn.
Right.
And keep up counter magic or something else, and it is Snapcaster bait-able, so like this looks really cool in a blue-green deck.
It does. It does mean that it effectively costs you 8 mana to Snapcaster this, which is sort of bad.
Correct.
But the fact that, again, you're getting a 5/4 on turn 2 means you've probably created a pretty interesting clock. I personally think this is, of all of them, this is the one that I'm expecting to see people figure out a way to break.
Sure.
Just because the CMC is so low. You know, I was always a little surprised that we didn't see more, like, Call of the Conclave never broke through. A 3/3 for 2 in Standard was always, like, fine, but, like, nobody really went crazy with it. And I was, that back in the day when Watch Wolf was first printed, it was like, oh, yeah, this is a really good rate. Like, the fact that that's not good enough means that a 5/4 for 2 where there's no, it's not Mirror Superior. You don't need Burning Tree Emissary in your opening hand. You can just make a 5/4. It's not a Treacherous Pit Dweller. It's not Hunted Horror.
But like stuff like this getting Fatal Push seems so bad.
It does. That's true. That seems
like
horrible.
It's like you're just like, oh, I don't do anything.
This
for
getting
two turns.
Vapor. This getting vapor snagged.
Like there are so many things that make this go wrong. That like, as a threat in a green blue deck, where maybe it's Jace, not Snapcaster Mage. Jace, it doesn't have that same problem because you don't have to tap out for Jace the turn you cast Jace.
Right.
Maybe that's the answer. But like, I think as a late game, I can play 2 mana and then keep my mana up for Cryptic Command, worst case scenario. As a threat there, it seems really exciting. Plus, you can play it turn 2 and then be a little bit more tempo-y, where on turn 3, you can play a land and have Vapor Snag open to kind of protect stuff. So there is a little bit more versatility in that deck. Yeah, I don't know. It's a little frightening to just get like blown out, though, the way this can get blown out.
Agreed. I mean, I think so. One thing I do think is interesting about this card is, remember, it's an aggressive threat that plays well with Delver because it's a spell that makes a creature.
Totally.
As opposed to a creature.
No, I think a green blue, this card in a teamer tempo deck seems really fascinating.
Yeah, especially because if you play this with like this and Stubborn Denial play very well together.
Totally.
If you wait to play this until turn 3. Where you have a mana open, you effectively get to protect it.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. No. I think this card has potential. There's a huge downside to it.
Yeah. Agreed. It's my favorite one.
Next, I want to do a Creature's Last Mercy, which is the white one. White, colorless sorcery. Your life total becomes equal to your starting life total. Land zone on tap. People have talked about this at a burn. I think that one green mana, you can gain 8 life card is just significantly better than this.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I think... there's better life gain effects that aren't as damaging that don't tap you out the next turn, and turn 3 isn't that good even, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Next is the blue one, Kefnet's Last Word. This is mind control with this effect. It's blue for 2. It's actually not mind control, it's control magic.
Yes.
It's literally control magic, but you don't untap.
But for multiple things. It's a creature and enchantment artifact.
Creature artifact enchantment. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's
it's pretty good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's definitely a versatile card. The question is how bad is this untap thing? And it's better here, I think, because you're getting a threat that's hard to kill and it's permanent.
Steals it forever.
Yeah, you're 2-for-1-ing your opponent relevant. With it, which is more relevant than the other effects. So I definitely think this is potential. And it being a sorcery is better than an enchantment for infinite reasons.
Right.
So yeah, I definitely think this is an interesting one. 4 mana is a lot, and how good is mind control effects? And the mind control effects out there is, like, I feel like, what's the blue one? gain control of target creature for two or less.
Threads of Disloyalty.
Yeah, Threads of Disloyalty still seems like a stronger play than this.
I agree.
And so that's kind of where I'm at on it. Last is Hazoret's Undying Fury. I'm glad Hazoret survives this situation.
Well, somebody pointed this out. Yeah, right? So it's the others are all death, but yep. Hazoret seems to live, or yep. in some ways live.
I don't know. I think she lives. I think she gets past this.
Okay.
So I think if we ever come back, we'll have Hazoret just messing people up. This is 4 red-red. Shuffle your library, then exile the top 4 cards. You may cast any number of those non-land cards with converted mana cost to 5 or less from among them without paying their mana costs. Lands you control don't untap. The only deck I can see this really seeing play is a Storm.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. I think it, as a one of in a top end of a Storm deck, I would not be, like, I would not discount this card, I guess, but otherwise I don't see this being that important. And that's almost in standard, I can see it seeing more play in a storm like deck than even this format, where
it's
like
just, yeah, it's not easily controllable, and it's,
but for 6 mana you win is basically what it says in storm. It plays a lot like what's the card that
Fast and Flames?
No, Storm, shuffle your deck, reveal the top card, you get to cast it for free.
Oh, Mind's Desire.
Mind's Desire. It has a very Mind's Desire-y feel to it. Like revealing, you know, you get the top 4 cards. It's like Mind's Desire for 4.
Kind of. I mean, look, you get 4 cards in a deck where a lot of the cards you're casting are low velocity. So you're talking, like, imagine you play this for 6 mana and you get like land, 2 cantrips, and a ritual. Like,
I'd be fine with that in Storm.
For like 6 mana?
Those two can't, like, you get it. Plus, those cantrips are probably good. And half of those cantrips are Manamorphose, which is also a cantrip, or is also a ritual with this effect. So you go,
yeah,
like,
maybe you're right.
You'll end up at 5 mana after casting this. And not to mention, most likely you cast this for 4 because you have Baral or Electromancer,
right.
Or 5 or something, 5 to 4.
Yeah.
So,
true.
Like,
yeah, maybe.
I can see it. I can see it in Storm. I think that's the one place I can imagine it happening. And that's the cycle. I mean, like, and in Storm, the untap effect doesn't matter.
Yeah, something somebody pointed out to me, by the way.
You win that turn.
Because I made a comment about this on my review of these, was that the Kefnet one, the go back to 20 life for 3 mana.
Sure.
That's
Oketra.
Oketra, yeah. That it doesn't count as gaining life because it says your life total returns to its original total and doesn't state gain life. So I was like, this is great because for 3 mana, you can get around effects like Skullcrack.
No, but it's gaining life.
And somebody pointed out and said, just your life total changing to a higher amount does count as gaining life,
yeah.
Even though it doesn't signify life gain. Which
yeah, yeah.
It's an important distinction because it's confusing. But yes, so it's not what I thought.
Yep. I've ran into that problem before, Commander, where like I was like, oh, but I didn't gain life. I'm like, no, you did. next is the defeat cycle, starting with Chandra's Defeat, which is 1 red. Chandra's Defeat deals 5 damage to target red creature or red planeswalker. If that permanent is Chandra Planeswalker, you may discard a card. If you do, draw a card. I think of this cycle, the 2 most relevant are the red and the black one. The black one's probably insane. Liliana's Defeat is destroy target creature or planeswalker, black planeswalker.
Are they all defeat? They're all something to defeat?
Yeah.
Or they are. Okay. So go back to Liliana. The good one, you think?
Liliana is 1 black mana. Destroy target black creature or black planeswalker. If that permanent was a Liliana planeswalker, her controller loses 3 life. First off, all black planeswalkers in Modern are Liliana. I don't think any of the non-Liliana ones. Oh, I guess, like, I've seen an Ashiok once or twice or a Sorin, so this technically can kill those, and you don't get the 3 life benefit. Oh, no. But half the creatures in Modern right now are black. Like, this card is a serious, real card in Modern.
Yeah, I mean, don't you just think that this is going to be a sideboard deck in shadow decks for the meta? Like, don't you just think?
Yeah, I think this is just totally playable in every
deck. Extremely, an extremely mirror heavy deck. Like, when you see the Grixis shadow mirrors, it's going to be like Snapcaster my defeat, take out your shadow.
Yeah,
like it's just that's just
and it's
like,
gonna, like it's going to get so many different things. Like, this card is insane. The red one, which is Chandra's, I think also has a chance of seeing play metagame dependent. If there are a little bit more heavier percentage of red creatures like that, you need to be able to kill. Or, I mean, right now people are playing with 4 mana Chandra, with the four ability Chandra. Like, that is a card in the format.
Torch of Defiance.
Plus, this takes out a big chunk of Nahiri. Like, there are red planeswalkers out there to get rid of. So, I do think this is also a legitimate card to talk about. I don't think Gideon's Defeat is playable.
It can only exile
attacking or blocking white creatures. I think that's not relevant enough. Especially when the most common white creature is a 1/1 spirit.
Yep.
Jace's Defeat doesn't counter Jace's Vryn's Prodigy. Or it does, but it doesn't get you the bonus, which makes me so sad. and I don't think Gainsay is that good, so I don't know why this would see that much play. Nissa's Defeat is destroy target forest, green enchantment, or green planeswalker. If that permanent was Nissa, planeswalker, draw a card. I just don't think this is that good.
This one is right on the fringe for me.
Because of the destroy target forest, and we live in a world where people play forest swamps and forest mountains?
Yes. Granted, I don't think this is going to see any play, but like the first ability is a relevant thing they don't print anymore, which is Stone Rain.
Sure.
It's partial Stone Rain. Yeah. It's sideboard Stone Rain for the right deck. That if you aren't playing red, you're like, okay, I have a green ability to destroy a land now.
Sure.
And then the other part of that is you never see Nissa Planeswalkers in Modern ever.
Well, but it does still just kill green Planeswalkers, but how many green Planeswalkers are there? Like
Garrick. Yeah, you don't ever, like hardly. Like, Dawnbreak Raid. Like,
which, yeah, doesn't see play anymore.
And Nissa Feast is nice to play.
Yep. and those are the defeats. So Liliana's Defeat, super high on. Chandra's Defeat, I can see seeing play. The other three don't seem likely.
Got it.
Yep. Next is our spoiler card. Or preview card.
Yeah.
Claim to Fame.
Card's sick.
I mean, I think this in Grixis Death Shadow decks has a high chance of being played. Like, the part of this that brings it to me is the fact that you can Thought Scour this into your graveyard accidentally,
right,
and it's still super relevant. Like, any card that I can Thought Scour accidentally into my graveyard and basically it's draw two cards for one mana versus draw one card is, like, a card that I'm definitely going to be looking at.
Yeah.
And on top of that, this does really good things. I think this does work better in Jund decks. I think it has strength in different decks. In Jund decks, you get Tarmogoyf and Deathrite Shaman. Not Deathrite Shaman. Death Shadow.
Yep.
In Grixis decks, you can mill it off a Thought Scour. I guess those are the only two relevant red-black.
Yeah.
Mardu decks is not super relevant.
Yeah.
Your deck specifically that you're playing. Well, I guess that's the other point is that really, you just need the claim half. There are decks that are just going to play this for the claim half. We don't have an unearth effect in this format. And so your deck that you've been playing everywhere, Superior Burning Coco, will definitely take advantage of the black half, no problem, because being able to get Mir Superior into play seems really strong
off
of this.
Seems very strong.
But you also can splash red off of Burning Trees in that deck, or you have Stomping. Just play one Stomping Ground, just so sometimes you can claim or you can fame.
One of the things about this card, and I seriously...
Oh, I guess we should read what it does. Sorry. It's a double-sided card. Claim is one black sorcery, return target creature with converted mana cost two or less from graveyard to battlefield. Fame is an aftermath card, so you can cast it from your graveyard for one red, one colorless. Give target creature plus two in haste.
So the reason I'm considering putting this card into Coco, and the current list plays one profane command, which I honestly say that the most valuable thing you get out of profane command in that deck is the mirror breaking, like Goyf versus Goyf type of
everything has fear.
Yes, but that's less good now with Shadow having Anglers and Tassigers running around because
the whole format is black cards.
Yeah, so it's profane command has been a fringe.
Hashtag Liliana's Defeat. Hashtag going to be the best.
Yeah, I love that card. So, but I could easily see putting in one Stomping Ground in this deck. And I could see then with that one Stomping Ground, it becomes a deck that's able, instead of the Profane Command, to play one Claim to Fame, because mid game when you draw that Mirror Superior and you don't want to draw and you have no Vial, you have no way of then you claim fame, a Burning Tree from your graveyard, it puts it in play, you get the mana and you cast the thing, and then you have the in theory you have the mana to cast what's it called?
Fame.
And you give your Superior haste, and you swing for seven.
Yeah, it's really
good. Seems really good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we talked about this too. Your deck is playing, we don't need to go on a tangent on this deck that is very specific to our podcast, but I would even put maybe one Profane Command in the sideboard, and then you bring that in instead of Claim to Fame when you bring in all of your three drops. Because you were mentioning that your sideboard is now pretty three drop heavy.
Yeah.
And you can maybe make it so they can switch interchangeably. I think this card is really good in different places, and I think we're just at the beginning of where maybe it could see play.
Yep, agreed.
Next card on our list. This is the Desert Cycling Lands. There's two places this is relevant. There's a bunch of weird Desert Matters cards that, like, it's really hard to evaluate how important those are going to be. And it's very possible some of them see play because of just, you know, there's the Sacrifice of Desert Exile Graveyard. There's a lot of them will get into some that are super relevant. But on top of that, Cycle Lands are important. You know, if there's a red-green, for instance, Aggro Loam deck that after they have the four red-green one, they want to play with these ones on top of that, I can be being super relevant, and just that's just definitely an option. You know, eventually, people need... There might be decks that want X amount of cycle cards,
right,
cycle lands, that go with their loams and other things, and this might be just the important
cycling
cards to
for
accomplish
two
it.
Mana just seems aggressive. It just seems
well. That's what the other one cycled. I mean, but that's what we have in Modern. So it's more. It's more bringing it up more to point out. A, cycling is relevant. B, there is a deck that wants as many cycle lands possibly as possible, and this is an option for that deck.
I think these are right on the edge.
I definitely think they're on the edge.
They don't feel relevant to me.
I think if you can gain relevance from the desert, they become really relevant.
I agree.
And there are like three different lands from this set that have the activated ability of sacrifice a desert, do a thing, and that's relevant.
Yeah, lands, utility lands like that, those are interesting. But yeah, these seem pretty insular.
Yeah. Next is Endless Sands, which is land, desert, another desert.
Yep.
Tap to add one colorless. You can tap two mana to exile target creature you control, and then you can tap four, sacrifice Endless Sands, return each creature card exiled with Endless Sands to the battlefield under your control.
So it's kind of like a, what was that card called? There's an artifact from...
way back in the day.
Mirrodin.
Coffin or no. Ice Chamber.
Talk. I'll remember.
Yeah. So basically, what's cool about this card, it's really grindy, and it, Modern would have to be in a very specific place to want to play something like this, but it basically blanks. If you have this online, every removal spell your opponent plays is negated.
Right.
And for a while, they'll be able to stop you from being aggressive, but then you'll have a turn where you can play all of them at once again. And so it's in a Jund, classic Jund versus classic Jund matchup. The mirror, this is a game breaker in that matchup. Because every creature they try and kill, you save, and then at one point you can overrun them with all the creatures that died previously.
Right.
So it's definitely a card to look at. It's very unique, I think, in Modern. We don't have anything that really does this right now. We have artifacts to do this, the Hell Vault is very comparable to this.
Right.
But this definitely has cool effects to it.
Is it called Synod Sanctum is the card I'm thinking
okay.
of, right? Right? It's a one mana artifact. Yeah. Two mana tap, remove target permanent you control from the game, and then two and sacrifice it, return to play under your control, all cards removed with it from
right.
the game.
Right. It's exactly very, that card.
Yeah. It's just the land version. It's the desert version.
Yeah. Which is free, which is the point.
Yeah.
And deserts are maybe relevant. There are now cards that tutor for deserts to put them into play. So they created a huge toolbox out of them. There's a bunch of deserts that do a bunch of different stuff. So playing the green guy that puts a desert, is a rampant growth for desert on a 4-drop.
There's definitely something to be said for the fact that I think people underestimate. I remember Paul Avito wrote an article about this once, Play More Lands, I think it was called. And it was just lands are sweet. There's a lot of them that do a lot of sweet stuff. You should be playing more than less because flooding out with lands that are really good is better than not having enough lands because you're afraid. And
this comes into play untapped.
Yeah, I think just if you think about it, the opportunity cost there to play a land that has even a very, very, very nominal ability is so worth it. And you see it all the time. There seems to be a little bit of a, it takes the community a little bit of time to catch up to this. It's manlands weren't worth the money they're worth now for a long time. It took a long time before people were it used to be, it was Raging Ravine is good and Colonnade's good and those will see play.
Creeping Tarpit.
Yeah, but Tarpit took a lot longer to catch on.
Well, it was a legacy. Longer. It was more of a legacy card than a modern card because Lightning Bolt.
And it took a lot longer for the green white one to catch on.
Totally.
And the only one that never really caught on is the black red one. But I've seen people play the black red one.
I played the red black one. Red black one is an interesting one. And I think red-black is better than a lot of the new ones.
Yeah. The new ones were underpowered compared.
Yeah, but the reason the red-black one's kind of insane is sometimes because it's underplayed more than anything is because sometimes your opponent just is like...
they forget what it does.
That's not a land that's worth me paying attention to.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, I fireball you.
Dome
for
you
12.
For 7. Yeah, exactly.
All right. So, yeah. Play lands. And the deserts, I think deserts are more interesting than people are giving credit for. That's my kind of one statement. There's enough tribal with them. There's enough different cards that do something interesting with desert cards. And there's tutoring for them. And so, there's a bunch of really interesting effects that you can tutor for on your deck. And they're lands. So they're just on top of it, just good. Next on our list is Hollow One. 5 mana. Artifact creature, Golem. Hollow One costs 2 less to cast for each card you cycled or discarded this turn. Cycling 2.
All right. So 5/5?
It's a 4/4 for 5.
Yeah, this card...
sorry, it's a 4/4 for free.
Right. Well...
you discard 3 cards, you get it for free.
Yeah. It costs 2 less for each card. You've discarded or cycled?
Yeah. Ignore the cycle half. I mean, the cycle half is good. So, playing this in in Living End is just a card that you'll... sometimes you get free 4/4s for fun, and sometimes... and then you can cycle it, so you can also put it in your graveyard if you're going to Living End. So, Living End by itself will be playing this card. But on top of that, talk about, Dredgevine decks, this is a perfect card for Dredgevine because you cast it, which means this brings back Vengevine. So you get this plus whatever Vengevines you discarded. Not that Vengevine, you know, that's obviously a specific style of card.
Cathartic
like.
Reunion just casts this card.
Yeah, just cast it for free.
Yeah.
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 No, no, it doesn't. You discard two cards.
Draw three, discard two?
It's discard two, draw three.
Discard two, draw three.
But there are many different... But on turn three, Cathartic Reunion, you can cast this for one mana. So it's a one mana 4/4. So there's like the hoops you have to kind of jump through to make this card work are not a problem.
No, it works. It works with a lot of cards that are already good, doing good things.
Yeah, and like on top of that, like they're just the like there's enough cycling now in this modern format that there's a conversation to be had just of like cool, good cycling.
Totally.
And like this card in Living End sounds insane. This card in Dredgevine decks is like exactly what those decks wanted. So between those two things, I think this is super relevant.
What we got next?
You just aren't. You're not excited about this card. It's a free 4/4.
I'm like, I think.
Well, look at Mir. Not Mir Superior. Mir.
Mir Superior.
No, the seven mana Mir.
The seven mana Mir. Oh, what? Sure. The four. Infinity. The 4/4.
Yeah. This is comparable to that, and Enforcer? In some decks, yeah, Mir Enforcer. Like, and that card has been bonkers. And in Infinity, it's a little too slow, but the hoops you have to jump through for Infinity, they're just better things to be doing. This goes in decks that the hoops they're jumping through, this might be the best thing they could be doing. And you can cycle it. So the time you just like can't do anything with it, you just cycle it in your
Living
graveyard.
Living End is the deck to me that's like the obvious. That's really good.
Easy.
That's
easy.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a free 4/4, but it's like, I don't know. I get it. How good is a 4/4? Versus like a 5/5 or a 6/6, even if you're getting it for free, but you're like getting it for free as like a secondary cost.
A 4/4 on turn two seems really good. A free one. The Prize of Maelgrim is a free 3/3. That's insane. Compare this to Prize of Maelgrim. They're comparable. Prize of Maelgrim.
Okay. When I was building Coco,
that's
I messed
funny.
Around.
I said Prize of Maelgrim and then I said Pies of Maelgrim. I got rid of the R's.
I messed around with Apocrysite a lot when I was building Coco. That was a card that was an early version of the deck, a card that was like...
Is much better than Apocrysite.
But hear me out. Yeah. If you hit Apocrysite off a Collected Company, it was awesome.
Sure.
And if you got it off of like a Resurrection, it was great. But at the end of the day, it was just a 4/4. So like even... And it was a Brazilian 4/4.
But those are two things that you're... The thing you're doing, you're getting at instead of another card. This you're getting from your hand for free, and it cycles. Like, Apocrysite, if it's dead in a matchup, is bad.
It's still just a 4/4.
You can't cast it from your hand.
You're not like...
But the 4/4-ness was what was good about Apocrysite.
It's not like a 4/4...
It's all the hoops you have to jump through, and the fact that it's a 1/1.
It's not like a 4/4 madness or something. It's like, this is a card that's in your hand. You're spending
a
card.
This is significantly better than 4/4 madness. This is a 4/4 cycling. Like, the fact that you can cycle this for fun, and or it's free. I think this is much better than that.
I think it's fine.
Hostile Desert.
Is this the one
that you exile a land card from your graveyard? Hostile Desert becomes a 3/4 elemental creature until end of turn, and still a land. Desert.
Yeah, this card's sweet. I talked a lot about this the other day. I don't think this card's gonna like break Modern or anything like that. I think the obvious comparison is Mutavault. It's not as good as Mutavault. The relative cost of 2 damage versus 3 damage. 3 is obviously much better. I think that the comparison that I made was like cost and power. Is like, okay, so obviously Lightning Bolt is better than Shock. But how much better is Incinerate than Shock? And like that's kind of where I go with this. Is like I would still probably in Modern almost always play a Shock over an Incinerate.
Totally.
Even though it's 2 damage versus 3, and that's kind of where you're at with this.
I mean, Shock's you play in Modern. Look at Tar Fire. I mean, obviously it's for other reasons, but Tar Fire and Seal of Red.
Yeah. On the other hand, I have played Standard decks where they're like very spell heavy and they're thrilled to be playing Incinerate effects and like they're very powerful. So like. I think this card has a place. I don't think
it's hard to say if this will see play in Standard just because land's getting into your graveyard, but...
I think this card's good. I legitimately think this card is good.
Once again, it's a desert. There are tutor effects for deserts. That's relevant. B, it's a man-land deck. It's a man-land card, so man-lands are always something to consider. It's a relatively affordable man-land. It's worse than the Worldwake ones because it doesn't tap for colored mana. It's cheaper to... activate, which is really relevant, but then it has that additional cost of needing a land in your own graveyard. So like there's different ways I bounce back and forth on this.
It goes toe-to-toe with a lot more problematic creatures than a Mutavault is the thing.
Would you play an Ink Moth Nexus over this card? Or a Blink Moth Nexus? Not even Ink Moth, because I think I'd play a Blink Moth Nexus over this card.
Depends on the deck.
A 1/1 flyer that can be a 2/2 flyer that, yeah.
Hmm.
Like, it's Lightning. If Lightning Bolt was the most played removal in the format, I'd be more willing to kind of talk about it. But everything dies to Phalanx Pusher here.
Yeah, but like, but there's also the fact that this card, like, a lot of the things that can just like gummy ground combat where this creates better situations for you. Like, for instance, attacking a Mutavault into a Snapcaster Mage is annoying when they've already gotten value off their Snapcaster Mage. Attacking this into a Snapcaster Mage is much better for you. Blocking a Wild Mekotal is so much better than this than a Mutavault. It's like there was limitations to what Mutavault could really do, and that's where I think this card has its play. I just don't think it's going to replace
The decks that are playing Mutavault that aren't playing are like Merfolk. Decks that are tribal, Merfolk, Elves.
Yeah.
And that's way more relevant than 3/4.
Yeah, it's fair. Yes,
yep. Next is Hour of Promise.
Oh yeah, the Hour.
This is 4 mana green. Sorcery, search your library for up to 2 land cards, put them onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. Then if you control 3 or more deserts, create 2/2 black zombie creature tokens, which I think is the less relevant half. This is a for 5 mana, for two lands of whatever you want and put them in the play, which I don't think exists in Modern.
Yeah, it's
now,
good.
Now, this would be much better if Dark Depths was currently legal, because this literally just finds you the combo. It is a tutor for deserts, so that's relevant again, I guess, but this card is probably too fringe.
This card will see play in Highlander Roulette. This card will also see play in Commander.
Well, no, I think this is a Commander staple, a Legacy. I think it might even be Legacy possibly playable, but I don't think it's Modern. Modern doesn't have the lands it needs to make this relevant. Like, even Scapeshift, this doesn't do a whole lot.
Yeah,
I mean, one thing to pay attention to this is if we ever have a 2-land combo to pay attention to,
right.
Something like Cabal Coffers and Urborg, or, you know, this is the card to start looking at.
It is a 5-drop that doesn't do anything when it comes into play because the lands come in tapped.
Unless you play with deserts.
Which is very unfortunate.
Yeah.
And that means that you're going to play as your 5-drop, and then they're going to answer, or they're going to kill you or do whatever.
Right.
Because they're just lands.
You could play with a bunch of cool deserts, like just play desert green. I don't know. But yeah. I agree with you.
The deserts are sweet.
Next, I have Leave to Chance. So Leave is 1 white, 1 colorless. Return any number of target permanents you own to your hand. Whatever.
Yeah.
But next is Chance, 1 red, 3 colorless. From your graveyard, discard any number of cards, then draw that many cards.
This was my pre-release promo. I got the stamp of this card.
So
this card sucks.
In Dredge, it doesn't.
Yeah, well, it sucks in my pre-release.
Oh, sure. Yeah. In Dredge, if you mill this into your graveyard, it is expensive. It is a 4-cost spell, but that deck already gets the 4 mana sometimes. You win when you cast this card.
Is that good, huh?
Think about it. Discard 5 cards and mill Dredge 5 times is what this reads.
It's true. Yeah.
I like have Goldfish with it a couple times. It's kind of insane. Now, turn 4 is slow, but it gives you late game resilience that Dredge kind of needs a little bit anyways.
Can you afford, though, to cast? Oh, you just discard it. You don't cast the first
half. You never cast the first half.
Got it. You just discard it.
Discard it or mill it. You play one of. Yeah, that's never.
That's fair.
Yep.
That's fair.
There are a bunch of cards that only work in your graveyard in Dredge. This is just one of them.
Yep.
Next is Life Goes On. We mentioned this before. 1 green. You gain 4 life. If a creature died this turn, gain 8 life. Anytime there's 1, gain 8 life. Burn has a bad day.
Yeah, I mean, Nourish has seen fringe sideboard play in certain decks.
Yep.
That's gain 8 for 2.
Yeah.
This is going to be the best comparison to this card is Feed the Clans.
Yeah, which is gain 8 for 2.
No, it's
gain 10 for 2 if you have Ferocious.
Yeah, and it's gain 5 normally. And that's a legitimate sideboard card.
Yep.
People have played the crap out of that card.
Is 1 mana better?
Yes. Always.
Yeah.
Always it's better.
1 mana for 1 less life better. Really, that 1 extra life isn't a big deal. The 2 extra life on the Ferocious is good, but I even don't think if it's that important.
You're going to gain 8 off this.
Yeah.
You're always going to gain 8 off this.
No, you have to kill a creature. That's the difference. Is killing a creature easier or harder than having
a you're going to play this card at the moment. You're going to enable the gain 8. Like, you're not going to play this card to gain 4. You're going to play this card to gain 8.
The issue with this, in Jund is where this would see play. And I think Jund could do that. I think Jund can be like, I kill your Goblin Guide, I gain 8 life. And then Burn just is miserable.
right.
So.
Shall we?
Next is Nimble Obstructionist. I love this card.
Is this the 1/1 for 1 that has Eternalize?
No, this is the 2 mana... 2 blue.
Okay.
Bird Wizard.
Oh, this
Flash
card's insane.
Flying.
Yeah, yes.
3/1. Cycling 2 blue. When you cycle Nimble Obstructionist, counter target activated or triggered ability you control.
This might... You control.
You don't control.
You don't control.
You don't control.
This is legitimately maybe my favorite card in the set.
Yeah, this card's insane.
It's a 3-1 flyer for three. So you
flash 3-1 flyer, like a 3-1 flash flying for three is all, like, you know what this is like? It feels very similar to Restoration Angel.
Yeah. This is easier to cast than Vendilion Click.
Yep.
Which, if you've ever played with a Vendilion Click, sometimes you just get there because it's a 3-1 flying for three.
Yep.
With flash.
With flash.
The fact that on the flip side of this, it also can cycle, and when it cycles, it stifles.
Yeah. So it can sometimes be stone rain, instant speed stone rain. I can't get over how much I love what this card does.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's instant speed stone rain that cantrips.
It's insanity.
In blue. Yeah, this card's one to look out for.
Yeah, this might be the best card in the set.
Yeah.
Probably.
Get spoils now.
Yeah.
I think Liliana's Defeat has a higher chance of seeing play than this does.
Seeing a lot of play.
That's
fair.
This is a much better card, though. When this is good, it's going to be insane. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this card.
Yeah.
Next is Ramnap Excavator. 2 green, Naga Cleric. You may play land cards from your graveyard. 2/3.
Yeah, this card's real good.
This card's real good. The fact that we now have two different Crucible World effects in Modern means that a deck that takes advantage of Crucible World effects is going to be good. This card is going to see play at some point in Modern's history.
Yep.
Get ready for it.
100%.
Like, this is another card that's like, this might actually be the best card in the set. Like, this is in the running for it. Like,
right.
Crucible Worlds is sees play in every single format, period.
We've built with it before in Modern. Yeah.
Literally every format. Modern is probably where it sees the least play, but even in Modern it sees play.
Yeah, you have 8 Crucible of Worlds in your deck now.
And this is better than Crucible Worlds in Modern, theoretically, because it can just attack.
Yeah.
And it's weaker to removal.
You liken this to the Magus of the Moon, Blood Moon. It's like the same.
I think it's better than that, though, because the Blood Moon strength is that nothing can kill it. And the color that it makes things into also can't kill it. So, like, versus this, which... Yeah, I'm in love with this card.
Yeah.
Yep. Nimble Obstructionist and this are probably my two favorite cards in this.
This would have been my pick for your favorite card. Would have been my guess.
Not to mention, like, we get Gitrog strategies are turned on and silly strategies that go around. Cycle lands again. Like, there's like all these things that I like to do that this card does. next is Reason to Believe. 1 blue, scry 3.
Yep.
Sorcery. And then Believe is Aftermath. Look at the top card of your library. You may put it onto the battlefield if it's a creature card. If you don't, put it into your hand.
How much does the back half cost?
5. Mm-hmm. So that's much worse. Mind you, this on can cast just straight up cast an Emrakul for 6 True. Mana, but just straight up puts an Emrakul in play for 6 and casts it. No, it just puts it on the battlefield. So it doesn't cast it. You don't get the trigger, but still really good. So just on that note, that's a thing it can do. How good is 1 blue, scry 3, draw this Believe?
Well, all right, there's two ways to look at this. The first one is if you play this early in the game because you're trying to set up a turn 5, do something unfair, to give yourself
those next 3 turns,
you have to keep the 3 cards, which is index for 3, which sucks.
It's index for 1.
No, I'm saying index for 3 cards,
yeah.
Which is bad. You probably don't want one of those 3 cards as much.
Well, but
guess.
You get this other half of this unfair thing. So you can set up, like, if say you on turn 2, Reason, put 2 lands on top and underneath his Emrakul, and then turn 3, get a land, turn 4, get a land, and play this. And you're playing,
The kind of deck that's playing this is probably accelerating one way or another. It's probably playing an elf,
Noble Hierarchs,
or playing a ramp spell or something. It's probably playing like a ramp spell on turn 2, and then on turn 3, it's playing this, and then on turn 4, it's trying to cast the 5 drop, is my guess, right?
Yeah.
That seems about right. And it feels to me like it's kind of that same thing of like when you scry and you're trying to sequence your deck, you're forced to keep a card you don't particularly want on top to wait the extra turn for the card you do want.
How many cantrips did a powerful thing have not seen play? How many cantrips have not seen play?
This isn't a cantrip.
It is.
It doesn't draw you a card.
It does. It draws you Believe every single time.
But it's... Yeah. It draws... It, okay.
I know, but I'm saying like cantrips that the red cantrip that gives a creature haste has seen modern playable.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So, like, yes.
I was thinking Mystic Speculation, but that's legitimately not a cantrip. It's just a buyback scry effect.
Right. And, like, so, like, there's a one mana scry effect that then does draw you a relevant piece of action.
Yeah.
That, and this can just draw you a card. It's five mana draw a card at worst, but sometimes you'll get creatures in the play and sometimes better than that.
You're right.
And so, like, I think that's a relevant conversation. And I think this card's probably a little bit under the radar.
Yep. Fair enough.
Yeah,
I think you're probably right, actually. I think I was wrong on that one.
Samut the Tested, red green 2.
I'll just let you
Planeswalker Samut. Up to one target creature gains double strike until end of turn, +1/-2. Samut the Untested deals 2 damage divided as you choose among 1 or 2 target creatures and/or players. -7, search your library for up to 2 creatures or planeswalker cards, put them onto the battlefield. Then shuffle your library, comes in a 4. So I've got this in my limited pool. It's bad in limited. It's probably not terrible limited, I guess, if you have a stronger threat. It's really bad in 2-headed giant. But more importantly, the only reason this is playable in modern is that this is a mono. This can be played in a 2-color green-red deck with Doubling Season to do the thing that the Rug deck was doing with Chase. We talked about this before when it was spoiled. If you weren't listening then, there's a Doubling Season deck out there that with Jace the Mind Skull, or with Jace Architect of Thought, Jace comes in, ultimates, you get the best card out of your opponent's deck plus the next Jace. You do this 4 times, then you put Emrakul into play, or something that gives all your things haste. This does that, but without having to play 3 colors. You only have to play 2, red, green, which are probably the best 2 colors to be doing this anyways, because you get the green slash the green stuff to get the cards you want. So you get her every time, and then one other one. She replaces herself. You ultimate again. So it does something. It's monocolor, or it's 2-color versus 3-color, which is relevant. Otherwise, that's all that I have to say about this card.
Yeah, fair.
Next, Scavenger of the Grounds. We're getting some of the Sack Deserts. Land, desert. Add colorless to your mana pool. 2 mana, sacrifice a desert, exile all cards from all graveyards.
This one's pretty decent.
This is, I think, very good. Worst case scenario, this is the only desert you have in your entire deck, and it's a land that comes into play that at any point you can sack to exile all graveyards for 2 mana, which is like totally a fine woodsy play as it is. And then whatever desert mechanics, if you play with other deserts, it might do something else, whatever. But
in modern, this is a legitimately, like, you can play this as a spell, and it'll just make your deck better, because you'll never, ever, ever get mana screwed.
Yep.
As long as you can support the colors. But yeah, it's very... It's,
you play as a sideboard card, like, you can, like, literally side it into matchups. Like,
I think this is super main deckable in modern. It's like...
Yeah,
it's,
totally.
It's a 3... I mean, it's a 3-mana spell, but, like, the fact that it's a 3-mana spell that you can play on turn 1 or 2 and probably cast action with means it's very good.
I mean, like, there eventually is... I guess I would liken this to Ghost Quarter. You would choose between this and Ghost Quarter and look what deck do you have a worse matchup against, Tron or Dredge, and pick.
I need to play some games against Eldrazi Tron. I was realizing that, like, with the whole Coco thing, I'm like,
sure.
I don't know how I would do it. It seems bad for me.
Yeah.
It seems like I have no way of messing with their lands.
Next is Solemnity. This is the one that a lot of people are excited for. I, like, don't know where I'm at on it. It's 2 right enchantment. Players can't get countered. Players can't get counters. Counters can't be put on artifacts, creatures, enchantments, or lands. With the white enchantment in Ad Nauseam decks, this makes it so they can't ever die from damage.
Right.
Which is an interesting effect. And then there's a bunch of stuff with count. You know, this goes infinite with Geralt's Messengers, like all of the undying creatures this now goes infinite with, which is relevant.
Doesn't this also go infinite with Devoted Druid?
Yeah, Devoted Druid. No, Devoted Druid doesn't, because Devoted Druid can't put the counter on it.
Got it.
It does go infinite with... it's the same reason Devoted Druid didn't go infinite with Malira.
Got it.
But it does go infinite with all the Persist creatures.
Sure.
So, like, this is a combo piece. It does a lot of powerful things. I'm wary of it because it's not a creature. Because
it's an enchantment. And
it's an enchantment.
And we found that searching for enchantments is incredibly difficult.
Searching for enchantments is really hard. They're not. You don't want too many of this type of card because they're not relevant unless you're going off. So it's a really weird position. But it's a card that's definitely going to be tried out by people.
Right.
And it could be really powerful.
Fair.
Next is Striped Riverwinder. 6 blue, serpent, hexproof, cycling blue, 5/5. There's one deck that's going to play this.
Yeah, it's a big creature. That
it's a hexproof 6/6 that, or hexproof 5/5 that cycles for 1 mana, and Living End will be interested in this deck, this card. I think Living End now has a very serious reason to be blue.
Yeah, something that's actually kind of interesting, and I found this from playing Mental Magic and doing like searches on here so many times, there's a lot less hexproof creatures than you'd think.
Yeah, because they like realized it was a mistake and printed them in lower numbers.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, they printed them in lower numbers, and B, stopped printing them at low costs and with evasion. They won't do any of that anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Interesting. So Invisible Stalker was like, that, we're not saying that again.
No, yeah, they literally think Invisible Stalker was a giant mistake.
Just because it's so hard to interact
with. It and Geist together, they were like, oh, we messed up on Hexproof.
Interesting.
They think Hexproof is better than Shroud still, because Shroud has a learning issue. Well, Hexproof is just really powerful.
They're just not,
and so they have to figure out, yeah, they're just not going to print as much of it. Next is Supreme Will, blue 2, choose 1, counter target spell, unless its controller pays 3. Or look at the top 4 cards of your library, put one of them into your hand, and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order.
I can't remember if we talked about this on here or off the mic, but this is either Mana Leak or
Impulse.
Impulse.
Yeah, and which are both two very, very powerful blue cards. Yeah. And I would say in the top 10, 20 most historic blue cards of all time.
Definitely. The problem is...
3 mana is way worse than 2.
Yeah, and Modality's great. And, yeah. And I can't... This is one of those cards where like I wouldn't be surprised if I'm in a match against a blue deck in Modern and someone plays this against me where they are like... And I would be like... Okay, that's a powerful effect you just got.
You're never going to play more than one.
Yeah,
ever.
But on the other hand, if they played it, I would just be like, kind of feel like you should be playing 4 Serum Visions and then some mixture of the cards you actually want to be playing at lower CMCs than this.
And Mana Leak is so much worse on turn 3.
Yeah.
Because we live in a world where people are playing one drops.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like fine on turn 3, I guess, but like...
And like with Hand Disruption, like they see this and they have one extra turn to get this out of your hand if they need
to.
Yeah. Just seems bad.
Yep.
Yeah.
Next is Tragic Lesson. Instant speed, draw 2 cards, then discard a card unless you return a land you control to its owner's hand. If you want a land back into your hand, you want your hand to be bigger, or you want another land drop for whatever reason, or reuse an enter the battlefield effect, this is 3 mana instant speed, draw 3. I cast it
draw 2, you mean?
Draw 3. It draws 2 and then draws you that land you need.
Oh, if you want the land back?
Because you also get to play it as a land drop that turn, so worst case scenario... If you don't have land and you need a land, if you just have a land drop available.
This and Aether Hub will be friends in Standard at that much.
Yeah. There's a lot of shenanigans you can do with that effect. And the fact that you can also discard, which is totally fine a lot of the time if you don't want to return a land. This card's actually probably really good. I think it's being a little bit underlooked. I think it's like comparable to the other instant speed draw 3 cards, discard a land or discard an artifact or discard 2 cards effects that are out there.
Right.
So I would not be surprised if this sees more play than people are kind of looking at.
I think this card's good. Yeah. I mean, look, Deprive is a card that took a long time to catch on, even as a 1 or 2 of.
Yep.
And it did eventually catch on as a good card.
Love Deprive, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. And, you know, this is...
Better than... This version of the Deprive drawback is better, because you can... Having the choice between discarding and putting a land to your hand is huge.
Yep, agreed.
That's the last card I have. Cards that we didn't talk about that I didn't put here, because this was originally going to be... a battle list, and then I forgot. I want to talk about Nicol Bolas.
Yeah, he's sweet.
I think he's more likely to see play than his old one.
Because he was one less? Does he cost 7?
He cost 7, so that's definitely helps him. I think his abilities are more relevant. Target, and I'll read it. So it's 4 red, blue, black. Nicol Bolas comes in for 7 loyalty. Target opponent exiles cards from the top of his or her library until he or she exiles a non-land card. Until end of turn, you may cast that card without paying its mana cost. Can be relevant. It's pretty good as a plus. Plus 1, each opponent exiles 2 cards from his or her hand, which is insane. Minus 4, Nicol Bolas deals 7 damage to target opponent or creature an opponent controls. So you can just cast this and dome someone for 7 and win. That's kind of one of the reasons. You can get a person below 10 in Grixis. Like, that's a pretty heavy... I'm just imagining Bolas just, like, swiping a person.
It's pretty awesome.
He's just like, I'm just going to hit you a little bit. And they're just like, oh, 7.
Yeah.
And then minus 12 is obviously really good. Exile each non-land permanent your opponent controls. That's never... Well, it could happen. Plus 7, but...
The fact that he swipes you and stays at 3 loyalty is pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah.
He's like...
He can either kill a creature if you need to kill it.
Didn't we talk about this, that he's very similar to Karn in a lot of ways?
He's very similar to Karn to me.
Yeah, he feels a lot like Karn.
And Grixis gets the 7 mana. I don't think you're playing with more than one of these. And I think generally if someone's playing this, they're doing it a little bit more to be spicy than to...
Yeah.
Like, it's necessarily the best thing they can be doing. But...
Like, a Cryptic Command of Counterspell and a Serum Visions will, like, very often do more in the game than this, probably.
Just well, like, I mean, I think you play this and you win.
Yeah.
I think it's like the Emrakul of Grixis control decks.
Sure.
Like, it's just like, I'm going to win when I cast this. If you can't counter it the turn I play it, there's very little you're going to be able to do now.
I'm glad they made another Nicol Bolas, and I'm glad they made him less expensive rather than more expensive.
Well, they made one that was as expensive, right? So they made Nicol Bolas the Deceiver, which is the Planeswalker deck one.
What?
They made two deck. There's two Nicol Bolases.
Oh, really?
There's the dual deck one. Not the dual deck. The Planeswalker deck. Which
oh,
is
look at that.
Nicol Bolas the Deceiver. I don't know if I've fully read this. 5 blue, black, red, plus 3. Each opponent loses 3 life unless that player sacrifices a non-land permanent or discards a card. Minus 3, destroy target creature, draw a card. Minus 11, Nicol Bolas the Deceiver deals 7 damage to each opponent. You draw 7 cards.
Sick.
Yeah. It's
still,
cool.
Still good.
Not comparable.
No.
I'm excited to play Nicol Bolas Tribal because there's a bunch of Nicol Bolas Tribal cards like Visage of the Bolas that lets you tutor for a Bolas card.
Sick.
Oh, no, it tutors for Nicol Bolas the Deceiver, which is not as good, but still, I'm down. Okay. That's it for the set review.
Did we miss the 3-mana artifact that for 2 becomes a copy of something?
Oh, we did. We didn't talk about that. Do you want to talk about it?
I feel like that card's pretty good, isn't it?
It's definitely sweet in Commander.
I was impressed when that card got played. Like, it's efficient.
Where is it? Okay, some stuff. Abandon the Sarcophagus is one we missed. 3-mana, you may cast non-land cards with cycling from your graveyard.
Yeah.
If a card with cycling would be put into your graveyard from anywhere and it wasn't exiled instead. The first half of this is pretty sweet. Like,
yeah, you just have to have a lot of stuff in your graveyard first.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, it feels very much like a Crucible Worlds-like card.
No. Doesn't this read that if something has cycling when this is in play and goes to your graveyard, the card's exiled? And you can play cards with cycling from your graveyard.
No. You can cycle. If I cycle a card in my hand,
yeah,
it goes to the graveyard still. It says if a card enters your graveyard from anywhere with cycling that wasn't cycled to get there, it gets exiled.
So you can't mill yourself after this is in play.
Correct. You can't mill yourself, and if like a cycling creature dies, you don't get it for free.
Got it. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I misread this. I opened this card in my
basically every card you have that has cycling, it now benefits you to cycle it and then play it instead of just playing.
I opened this in my pre-release pool, and I didn't play it.
It's better than what you assumed. The drawback is a little rough, but it's a little bit better than that. The other one that we wanted to talk about, which is the one you were mentioning, was Mirage Mirror. 3-mana artifact, Mirage Mirror becomes a copy of target artifact, creature, or enchantment, or land until end of turn. That's pretty sweet for 2-mana.
Yeah.
Definitely shenanigans can happen with this card. I could also see this card completely being busted, so I'll give you credit there.
Yeah.
That we should talk about it.
I think this card has, definitely there's a lot going on with this card that's potentially incredible.
All right.
I just want to read this card one more time just to make sure I'm not forgetting anything. It's right here. Yeah, there's a couple really distinct places that I see this card being good. First of all, we already talked about the fact that there's a land thing that it makes Dark Depths good. This is also good with Dark Depths. It's the same thing, isn't it? For 2-mana, this becomes Dark Depths, and then you get the token?
Yeah.
Right?
I believe so.
So there's that.
That's not a modern legal play.
No, agreed. There's that
and should never be.
There's that Grand Architect deck that's been running around where this seems like exactly the card you want in that deck.
For yeah, that's
mana,
really cool.
This becomes another Architect. There's also, because they play that Throne of the God Pharaoh or whatever it is, the thing that when at the end of turn, they lose life equal to the number of tapped creatures you control.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means like during combat, you attack with this thing. It's a Grand Architect. You do all the damage, and then before the end of your turn, you pay 2 more, and you make it into the other thing.
Sure.
And then they lose twice as much life. This card seems insane in that
deck. Yeah, that seems really good.
Very cool.
Yep, okay. I'm on board now.
There's some cool stuff with this card. I just think 2-mana repeatedly that you don't have to tap to copy something definitely seems like this has real, real application.
Sure, okay.
I wouldn't even be surprised if, I can't imagine you'd want this, but, I wouldn't be that surprised if you played this in Merfolk. It doesn't seem horrible.
So could you give me your top 3 favorite cards from the set?
The 3-1 flyer, nimble obstructionist.
Okay.
That's probably my favorite card in the set. I am personally just kind of in love with Ronus's Last Stand. That's such a me card. I'm trying to figure out how to make that card good.
Okay.
I've been thinking about it constantly.
Yeah, it's a 2-mana thing with a giant drawback that you have to figure out.
I love the fact that it triggers Delver. It's one of my favorite parts about this card.
Sure.
And past those two, I'm not quite sure.
Claim the Fame?
Maybe. Claim to Fame is insane. Yeah, I love that card.
Yeah, I think I'm at Ramanap Excavator, which is the Crucible Worlds.
Yep.
The Nimble Obstructionist, which is the 3-1 flyer for Flash. And then I jump, I think it's Hollow One.
Yeah, like you seem to be stoked on that.
It's either Hollow One or it's Claim to Fame. Like, it's between those two. And I imagine me playing more Claim to Fames in life, but me more excited when I make Hollow One work.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's it. That's the return to cycling. Both of these sets have been pretty sweet. I think they've affected Modern more than they've affected Standard almost.
Yeah.
And like it's a middle power level set, like nothing super, super strong, but cards are really important. I mean, like Gideon of the Last Trials is showing up in spades in Modern.
For sure.
And like just I think the more this time goes on, the more cards we'll see from this set. And that's kind of just the power level of cycling. I think cycling itself, like, I mean, we've said it before, cycling and two different, now three different versions of Flashback are in this block. And all those are kind of two of the most powerful mechanics of all time, and we have different versions of it. And one of them is like a modal version of Flashback. So like, I think there's a lot of play in this set, and I'm excited to see what it does.
Yeah, for sure. 100%.
All right, so and to wrap it up, make sure to follow us on Twitter. I am at Kes Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
We are at the MM Cast. Once again, check out our Facebook group. Once again, check out our Patreon and other Magic creators' Patreons. You know, a lot of people give free content, but the way this works is, you know, to be able to do this for free, some amount of money behind it makes it so you can do more exciting stuff.
Absolutely. We've been talking about this for so long. We have some really cool stuff in mind that we would like to start doing, and it would very much help us to do that with the Patreon.
Totally, totally. On top of that, make sure to, I think that's it. I think that's everything. I probably missed something. Oh, the Command Zone. Make sure to check out the Command Zone. We said at the beginning, said it again. They do awesome content, Jimmy and Josh, every week. It's rocking Commander content, which we talked a little bit about today, but they'll do a full breakdown. I think their set release came out last week. So if you want to know what cards are great in Commander from this set, check that out. And yeah, I think that is everything. Thanks, guys, everybody. I will talk to you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.